Hashem, we're here, we're learning here today. Could you hear Rabbi Chochan here with the microphone? It's better? Okay, I stole the microphone from the other room and I put him over here. Okay, here we go. I took it from the other room. I put it on the setup. Okay, let's lower up. We are up to, if it gets too loud, let me know. Turn the controls down. We are up to Perek Yud Aleph, the end. We're still doing these lists of the Malbim. Pasuk Tezvav through Pasuk Yud Zayin. The last few Pasukim of Perek Yud Aleph. Let's take a look at the Malbim. We finished the Radak. The Malbim begins on page 826. 826, Hashem says, Vayim Hashem Elay Oid Kach Lecha Kli Roya Evili. Rit Sayin Elay Mar HaRoya Ato Ye Evil. The shepherd is a fool. Shlo ye b'yod makel klal lahanig is a tzayin lemakel noyam lemakel chayvlim rak ye lekli klei horoye shemevashel bames habosar hatzayin v'oichel esam mashchisim. This shepherd has nothing. He doesn't have any tools. He doesn't have the stick, the staff, the makel called noyam, not the makel called chayvlim. All he has is a barbecue grill. A barbecue grill too to make dinner. And what he does is he takes the sheep and he slaughters them and he makes dinner and he destroys them. That's the story of Jewish history. It used to be in the good old days we had leaders who really cared about us. They were devoted to the good of Klal Yisrael, to lead them, to guide them. Everything they did was for our benefit. But in the later generations, the shepherds, it was about their legacy. It wasn't about Klal Yisrael. It wasn't about the people they led. It was just a stepping stone for their own honor, their own wealth, their own glory, power. It's a very unfortunate, very and very very common thing we see today in the modern world.
As Bill O'Reilly likes to say, "Who's looking out for you?"
Who's looking out for you? Many of the people that are politicians today, it's not about the people. It's about themselves. It's an opportunity to make money, an opportunity to... Shalom Aleichem, Mr. Lederfin, how are you? Baruch Hashem, we have another success story. Another survivor. It's not a joke. Shalom Aleichem. Okay, so Baruch Hashem, we're all survivors. That's a serious thing. Baruch Hashem. Okay, so we have. So unfortunately, this is a reality. This is unfortunately a reality. We are leaders. Every time you look at a leader, when you look at people who are running for office, the most important thing to ask yourself about the candidates: are they in it for themselves, or are they in it for the people? Everyone today is in it for themselves, but if there's a little element of they really care about the people, maybe ulai yesh tikva. Maybe there's hope. And this point is being made clear as day in Zechariah that we had shepherds in the past that had tools, a tool called Noyam, a tool called Chayvlim. Even when the tool was Chayvlim, but it was for our benefit. But when the shepherd has no tools, he's just in it. The only thing he comes to office with is a barbecue grill to slaughter sheep and to eat its meat, you know you are in a lot of trouble. Okay, Hamevin Yovin, Pasik Tes Zayin Kihine Onochi Mekim Roya Baretz. I am coming. You know they say. I remember when Bush W was running for office. I heard this many times. So when the presidents, you know, all the speculation, who they select as their running mate, and then finally Bush W selected Dick Cheney. At the time, okay, I'm not talking about what happened later on, and many people said the same thing. They said it's an excellent selection, not because he's qualified. Forget about his qualifications, that he's smart, and he'll take care of everything for Bush W, he'll run the country, but he has no ambition to be the president, because he wasn't a healthy person. Okay, yeah, he wasn't, and I don't remember the details, but the Sunday morning political commentators, they all said, there is no way in the world he will ever run for president. So he has no interest, he has no other ulterior motive in leading and serving other than serving the people. The big question every time you have a candidate for vice president is, oh, he wants to be president. So there's always, everything he's doing is always, he's always, you know, preparing himself for his next leap. Okay, and Hanev and Yav and Pence, people can speculate the whole day what was going on with Pence, the last tekufa of Trump's presidency. And look at Biden. Biden, he was the vice president, and he made it. He made it into the big leagues. He became president. There's always an agenda, and when there's an agenda, that agenda taints their real job of serving the people. And when you can say about a person, they have absolutely no ulterior motive. They're just here to serve the people. They have already grown children. Their children are all done. Everyone has their place in society. They're not going to become the next president. And they're here just l'shma. That's a very reassuring feeling. Now, it may be that you don't like their policies, so then that's another problem. But if you're in line, if you feel that their policies are in line with your hashkafa, and they have no ulterior motives, that's a home run. That's a real home run. And this point is being made by the Navi. And the Navi is saying that unfortunately, late in Jewish history, in the latter portion, our leaders did have an agenda. And when there's an agenda, that takes away from the success of their leadership. Pasuk Zayin Kinenu Chemekim L'Roi Ba'aretz, Hashem says, Shelo Yireh Hatzoyin. It's going to be a foolish shepherd. And when he types the word foolish, it means he has no plan. What's your plan? What's your goals? He has no plan. Shelo Yireh Hatzoyin Ki Hanich Chodos Lo Yivkoi Chaynu Shelo Yashkiach El Hanich Hanich Chodim. The shepherd will not pay attention to the animals that are lost. Here is where you're going to the mashal, into the nimshal, to the Jewish people who have gone into exile. He's not going to pay attention, but after people have gone into exile, hanar hatsoin hanolad bitzi'i rusoi lo yivakesh. Okay, the young sheep, he's not going to seek elikabitz t'loim b'zroyo l'cheko yisro, he's not going to carry them home. Hainish lo yashkich al yaldehem utzi'irehem. He will not pay attention to the young sheep. V'hanishperes lo yirapeh v'gam hanitzavol atzoyin ashalo nishpura v'nitzeves al raglecho lo yichakob b'mozen. He's not going to support the sheep which needs support. There's atzoyin habriya, the fatty sheep, the ashrina yoichal, he will steal. Every single one of the mafarshim struggles with this expression. According to the Malbim learns that it's one expression. Most mafarshim did not do that. The Malbim here learned something new approach. The words, the last line on the page, page 826 in the pasuk, the Malbim adds in a word into the pasuk. No one has done this. And the word he adds in, ad. He will eat the meat of the fat, of the fatty ones, until the point where their feet are broken. Their legs are broken. What does that mean? What does it mean? You can eat their meat until they can't stand on their own. What does that mean? So the Malbim learns an expression. He's going to rob. He's going to rob the rich until the rich are no longer stable. They can't support themselves. He's going to cause such harm to the successful people. Talk about in politics, the businesses. You'll tax them. You'll impose taxes upon the corporations to the point where the corporations it's unsustainable, and they pick themselves up and they leave the country, go to a different state or go to a different country because they can't survive. You take away their profits. Can you imagine what's going on in America? Their corporations, let's say, and then they're doing very, very well, and the government taxes them 50%. Communism. So then they say, what's the purpose of all this? You've robbed the fat of our business to the point where it's just not worth it to remain in business. After paying 50% tax and paying all our workers and all expenses, There's nothing left. Who needs this? We'll close up. Either we'll go bankrupt, we'll close up, or we'll go to another country, another place where they don't charge us 50% tax. That's how he learned Shah in the Pasuk. This is a very satisfying shot. But the difficulty in this interpretation is it's coming to add a word to the Pasuk that does not say. Ubisar Habir Yoichal, these wicked or foolish leaders will eat up the fat of the successful sheep, of the successful businesses of the rich people, to the point, you have to add the word ad, to the point, ufar sehen yiforek. These wealthy corporations and individuals, and these sheep, their legs have now been broken. They can no longer stand. They can no longer continue to sustain themselves in this society. And they declare bankruptcy or they leave. That is called bad leadership. Leaders is where you encourage people to succeed. The more you read the Tanakh, the more you see that Tanakh appears to be at least, I don't know, more a capitalistic system. Doesn't say anywhere the word capitalism, communism, socialism, totalitarianism. It doesn't say any of these words in Tanakh. And it is a very big mystery. What type of society is a Torah society? Is it a capitalist society? Is it a communist society? Is it a
Zionism?
What is Zionism? I mean, what is that? What is the ideal type of government in the state of Israel? What is it? What is the Torah value? It doesn't say these words, and you can darshan all you want. All you want. Yosef was the first economist. Yosef was the Mishnah Lemelech, and he taxed the people not more than 20, Chomesh. Not more than, it's interesting that number, 20%, is a very big number today in the Pentagon. The number 20% and different you read up on different things is the debt. If the debt of the government exceeds 20% of the GDP, then the government, it's in the crisis mode. Okay, check, Google that if that's correct. And I think we're holding now exactly at that 20%. Once you get past 20%, when the deficit is 20%, you got a big problem. And Yosef knew that. Because Yosef used those numbers. He used those numbers. You have to allow the country room to wiggle, to make your own profits. And the Malbim was ahead of his time. He understood this. And that's what I'm showing the Pasuk. Because most of the other commentators are here on this Pasuk, they did not do what he did. They understand that this last line are two separate statements. First, it says the Besar Habriya Yoichal, period, which means that they steal. They take the fat animals, they slaughter them, and they eat them. And then there's a new statement called Ufar Sehen Yifarek, that they break their legs. What does that mean? What is in this? So everyone here had a different interpretation of what it means. What it means they break their legs. But according to the Malbim, it's one line, and it means you take from them so much until you get to the point. Until you get to the point where you get to the breaking point, right? Yes, sure.
Yeah, I was looking at this. He said he adds the word "odd," and maybe that comma doesn't belong. What I'm thinking is Binyamin ze'ev yitrof ba'boker yochal
ad. Ad. So ad there means, what does it mean? Ad. Ad means it's the spoils. The prey. So Rav Michal is saying something very, very good. Rav Michal wants to say...
Maybe he was thinking of that phrase.
Aha, okay. He says something very amazing. Rav Michal wants to say is that if you look in the Malbim here, the Malbim page 826, the art school editor added a comma in between the word ad v'satsoyin habriya v'hashmena yochal. The art school editor added a comma after the word Yoichal. The comma does not appear, certainly did not appear in the manuscript of the Malbim. So the art school editor understood that he put a comma, and when it says the word ad sheyifarei gam par sehem, so ritzon loymar she'es ho ashidim shebohem yishlol v'yigzol momoinam. From the context, okay, he's not really explaining the end of the pasuk. So he understood the word ad means until the way I explained it. which would mean that he's doing something amazing here in the pasuk. He's putting the two parts together. He's adding a word into the pasuk. The pasuk should be understood in that fashion, and he's teaching about the degree of foolishness of what this leader is doing. He is taxing. He is taking away from the wealthy people to the point where they can no longer stand on their own. Ramachol says, who says that's what the Malm had in mind? Maybe the Malm had in mind that you can't in a word add into the pasuk, and it's two separate statements. He's, for whatever reason, not explaining the next part of the pasuk, and the word add...
There's some interference here from somebody's channel.
Okay, I'm going to put everyone on mute. Okay. Thank you for telling me. Everyone's now on mute. Okay. So maybe the Malm learns the word add does not mean until, but ad in Chumash means spoils. Baboker yoichal ad. In the bracha,
The odd scroll says pray.
Pray.
That's what I said.
Baboker yoichal ad. In the morning, Binyamin will eat ad. Ad is means, it's whatever the word, wherever the word comes from, means pray. So maybe the Malbim, he did not put a comma. He had no
paraphrasing, perhaps.
He had no intent to put a comma in the pasuk. Ad does not mean until. It means pray. Take out the comma, and all these single areas. Yes, that tzoyin habriya v'yashmina yoichal ad. The tzoyin that's briya v'yashmina, he eats as pray. He eats as, it's an expression, it's a paraphrase when it says in the Torah, in Binyamin, he eats as spoils of war. Possibly, okay? I don't know, to me, for some reason, I like the other shot better.
That's all right. I'm just a mild
okay.
Push on my part.
Okay, but it's a very interesting idea. Very interesting. The Haggah, in the Chidush, Rabbi Michal, he will have a Haggah. I in the art school edition, and cite the pasuk in Birchas Yaakov. Let's go further. The next words of the Malm are on the next page. Page 829. Hoi, roi, woe to the foolish shepherds. Okay, these foolish shepherds, which have abandoned the sheep. Cherev al zeroyai, a sword on al zeroyai. Hu sheyipol koichai gvurasai. The end will be is that these evil or foolish shepherds, they will come to an end. Notice that the Malbim does not want to discuss the translation of the word ho'elil. If you remember last week, we had a very long discussion. What does this word mean? Does this word ho'elil mean? Is it the same as Evil? Okay, this word Elil is not the same as what it said in the beginning in Pasuk Tezvav. It says, Kachva Kli Roye Evili. There is a Vav. Here there is no Vav. The Targum Yoinasan, he translates the word Evili and the word Elil exactly the same. A fool, a foolish leader. But all of the other commentators disagreed with the Targum, and they said it's not the same word. In Pasuk Tes Vav, there is a Vav. In this Pasuk inside, there is no Vav. So they said that in one Pasuk it means a fool, and in this Pasuk it means a leader, Al. Al means who does not belong in office. He does not belong, you know, it's like in politics. You have a fool, you have a leader who is a fool, and he gets elected. And only later on, at the end, in hindsight, the people look back and say, this person should never have been elected because look at the damage that he did. Al. The Malbim, for some reason, does not want to get involved in this debate. And he ignores the translation of the word. He just says here, Ashrahema oizvim es atzoyin de roi'i ho'elil. Doesn't tell us what it means. And there's no even perish hamilas. The Rambam, the Malbim has two parts, usually to his perish. Here there is only one part. And it says now he's cursed. It's going to be a cherev al zroyim hu shiapul lekoicha gurasa ve'eini mina koho seche. His right eye will dim. Shehu sheyiska sheyiskal chachmasai ve'onish bein meguf bein benefesh. Okay, the right eye, the Malbim says, is a metaphor. A metaphor not doesn't mean eyesight like everyone else. It means his seichel, his vision for the country. what his plans will not be achieved. And he will be punished. Bein meguf, bein benefesh, v'horav yiv yitzhak abarbenel, perash, ala gripas. Okay, we had this before. Who are we referring to? The Malm, now for the very first time, tells us the timeline. The Malm delayed. The Malm over here, it's very strange. The Malm usually is the first one to inject massive chidushim into the pasuk, and here the Malbim is very timid. He's very quiet. Only at the very end does he want to say something. Everyone else, if he was very there, everyone was right away. What are we talking about? Which era are we talking about? Hordas and Agrippas? Are we talking about Tzidkiyahu? Are we talking about are we going back to the Bais Rishon? Everyone over here that we learned so far, they tried to tell us the timeline. And the Malm at the very end says this whole thing refers to who? To basically the same, I mean, he quoted, he doesn't say his own parish. He quotes the Abarbanel, who said the same thing as the Mitzudas David and the Radak, that we're discussing the era of Agrippas, the last 90 years of the Bais Sheni. Perish Lagubas Shahya Melchach Achran Shav Bakhar Biraimi. He was the last king who died by sword. The Gabino Shahya Ishtoiv Nerak, his son was killed imo. Shazemedame Lain Yiminoi. So he's saying over here is he's giving us more of a bear. The Marbanel is a child is called your right eye. Okay, when do you ever hear such an expression, such an idea that a person
his no, but the expression is the
apple of your eye. The child is the apple of your eye. So where does that come from? So it seems
Chazal have an expression, the pupil of the eye, like Abraham was described as the pupil of God, of Hashem's eye.
Okay, so here it's something similar. Here it says Cherev al Zeroy Oy. That refers to himself, al Ein Yiminoy. And then it says his child. His son was killed. No one said that. No one said in all the Mefarshim we learn over here that the right eye refers to the person's child. This the first commentator to make that statement. Agrippas. We have to go back and study Jewish history. Agrippas. He was the last of the kings before the Romans took over during the last era of the Bais Sheni, and he had a son that would have succeeded him, and he was killed as well. He is called the right eye. Zeroy, the pasuk repeats itself. Zeroy o yavash tivash. He himself, Agrippas, will come to an end. The ein yeminoi kahos seche will be dimmed. It's an expression which means that he will die. That concludes the Malm. Now let's see some of the Mamari Chazal before we go to the next parak. We have over here pasuk yud zayin. Hoy on this page 828. Hoy. Roi hoelil oizvi hatsoin chereval zeroi vial enimino sholosh shanim mechza hikif ad rionus kesar lebeta. Now we're going to describe over here, we're going to describe some historical events. Beitar was destroyed how many years after the Churban? 52 years after the Churban Bais Sheni. The Bais Sheni was destroyed. But even though it was destroyed, the Jews still had a hold in Eretz Yisrael. And Beitar was the stronghold, it was the fortress of Eretz Yisrael. It was there that Bar Kokhva led a revolt against the Romans, and they actually succeeded in totally rebelling against the Romans, where they didn't pay. What does it mean to rebel? You don't pay taxes. You don't pay tax, you don't pay homage to the Romans. They minted their own coins. And the Romans, this is way after the Churban. So Sholosh Shanim Umechza, 3.5 years, Hikif Ad Rionus Caesar, Ad Rionus the Caesar, LeBeitar, he did not tolerate this rebellion in Beitar. V'hoya Shanim Rabbi Elozov Hamodoi, Osuk Besakoi Uvitanisoi, he had a sense that a major Churban is going to come to Beitar. Indeed, it did occur. At the end, the Kesar attacked and basically murdered every last person in Beitar, including, and part of the people who died in Beitar were from the Asura Haruge Malchus. The Asara Haruge Malchus began shortly before the Churban Bayis Sheni with the murder of the Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Yossi Kohen Gadol, and the Nasi, Rabbi Shimon the Nasi. That took place a few months before the Churban Bayis Sheni. They were the first two. And then for the next either 52 years or the next, some learn 90 years, there were other individuals that were murdered publicly by the Romans during this era. This whole era was called the era of Shmad. Shmad means to destroy. It was not enough to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. The Romans were bent on destroying the religion of Klal Yisrael, not to allow anyone to have any connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And this went on for the next at least 52 years, and it was somewhere 90, not clear the dates. And part of that era was next 52 years later with the Churban of Beitar. When Beitar was destroyed, there was an astronomical number of people who were murdered. And the bodies were collected, and they were piled up as a wall around Beitar. It was a security wall. They used the human bodies as a wall, and the blood was flowing in the street, and the blood was collecting. The blood was used to fertilize the fields for 7 years. That's how much blood was spilled in this horrific time. And we all know that we commemorate this event every single time we recite Birchas HaMazon. We recite the Birch of HaTov, HaMelech HaTov, HaMeitiv LaKol Shebechol Yoyim, VeMuheitiv Meitiv Lanu. That Baracha was established after when the government, at some 7 years, I think it was 7 years after the Churban of Beitar, when the Romans gave permission for the Jewish people to bury the bodies, to give the bodies some dignity, to give them an honorable burial. And when they went out to bury the bodies, they found that the bodies did not decay.
After seven years,
it says. The bodies did not decay, and they made a bracha. Number one, the bodies had the dignity to be buried. We have to appreciate what that means. That the neshama, we have no idea what this means, but when a person's neshama leaves this world, that neshama has a need. What's the need? A need for honor. Okay, it's very hard. I'm just saying words. I'm just saying what it says in the big books. I have no idea what this means. We know that people in this world need a lot of kavod. Some people. Okay, they need a lot of honor. Every day you have to give them honor and give kavod, bow down to them and tell them how great they are.
More like dignity.
So it's similar. The dignity and kavod, that's what kavod really is.
Yeah, but it's not honor in the sense.
Whatever it is. And then there are people in this world that couldn't care less about their honor. Okay? Few and far in between.
Not too many people like that.
Not too many people. Few and far in between. You can count them on your fingers if you even can do that. People that do not care about their honor. You can insult them. They have no hakpadas. They don't have a crooked bone in their body. Very humble and meek people. Okay, but then when a person leaves this world, Chazal say, we don't know what this means, every person to a certain degree has a need, the neshama has a need for some small degree of honor. And that is why there's a very big inyan to give a hesped, which is called the kovoid achara. And it's very important. The neshama needs it. Why? Again, I'm just saying words we do not know. Part of that covered acharon is a dignified burial with a matzeva, a dignified closure, departure from this world. The mace cannot do anything, obviously. The mace is dependent upon the goodwill of the family and society to give it dignity in its departure. Yesterday, I went to an unveiling in Wellwood. It's a busy place on Sunday in Wellwood. It's really amazing how busy it is over there on Sunday. And there were a few funerals going on. And there's one funeral that really caught my attention. It wasn't Wellwood, it was Beth David. It was next door. This I saw in the cemetery next door. There was obviously a member of a fire department who passed away. And they had Beth Moses. I'm sorry, Beth Moses. And there were fire trucks a lot of them, fire trucks and emergency response vehicles, all lined up in the cemetery. I don't know how in the world they were able to get fire trucks into the cemetery. There was no fire. I never saw putting out the fires of Gehenna. Mary says the fires of Gehenna were burning, coming out of the ground. They called the fire department. But doesn't seem there was any fire there. There was no water there to go connect to. And it was really something to see. It's really something to see. It was very dignified how, you know, they came to pay respect. And all of his friends in the fire trucks. What?
They always do this for veterans.
They fold the flag. Right. And I used to learn Chaim Blum, next to the Chaim Blum for many years, there was the funeral home, Midwood Chapels. It was first not Frum, then they became Hartman, it became a very popular place, unfortunately. But I remember once there was always funerals. Every day there were funerals going on outside. Okay, and I remember, and usually in the early years, they were not religious, they were not Jews. There were many people not even Jews, they were goyish funerals. Then some Jews. I remember once there was a fireman, obviously, and they brought this antique fire truck. This like real old, out of a museum. It was a sight to see. And they put the coffin, I think, on this old fire truck, and they brought it to the cemetery. This is not a goyish thing. So people will say, oh, this is foolish. This is just. I don't believe so. There are a lot of makaris in Chazal that this type of thing is dignity. It's a bakavadika thing. The person, this was his life. This is what he was devoted to. And when he passes away, his neshama, Chazal say, again, I told you, we just have emuna. The neshama is present at the time of a person's departure from this world until he's buried. And the neshama sees every single thing that is going on. Got to be very careful to behave very well. You can't hide. When you're alive, you can hide. But when a person is no longer here, he sees everything that's going on. People are very spooked out about this. People who know this type of stuff, they are really, really spooked out when they go to a funeral, because in their mind, they believe that the nifter sees everything that you do and they're on their best behavior. Ad kidei kach. I know people do this. They go to the mikvah before they go to a funeral, because by going to the mikvah, it somehow cleanses them and prevents the niftar from seeing all of your averos. They don't want to be embarrassed. It's incredible. There are people that are really into this type of stuff. It's spooky stuff. People, you have to be a real maimon and a real yerushimayim and talmud chacham to know all these things that it says in the emunah and yerushimayim. But there's no question about it. This is a very, there's a lot of dignity. There's a lot of, I don't know if you know, if you're allowed to watch, we watched the King Philip, his funeral over Shabbos. I'm sure you've seen some of the pictures. And in the media, the only thing that counted was what were they wearing? And was Harry talking to William? You know, that's the only thing that counts. But if you saw some of the pictures, you know, it's very interesting. I remember my Rebbe, Rabbi Raps, and Chaim, he said to me that he was once talking to one of the Gedolei Yisrael, the previous generation, where a bishop, maybe even a cardinal, came to visit him, and he said to the rabbi, to the Gadol Hadar, you know, I know your religion inside out. That's what I do the whole day. I'm you know, part of the clergy. I study these things. And I have to confess that everything that you do is better than the way the ceremony, the Jewish ceremonies, every in the life cycle is better, is more than everything that we do, except one thing. We have much nicer funerals. So the Gadol Hadar, whoever this Gadol Hadar was, without skipping a heartbeat, said, I agree. I agree. The goyish funerals, there's what to learn from them. That's quite a statement. Okay, Chaim ben Rebbe told this to me. That there's what to learn from a goyish funeral. Now, I don't know, you talk about that, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry over here. I don't mean that.
I don't mean
total nonsense that goes on in this world. We're talking about, like, let's say you go, you know, I don't even know how to watch it. You've got to watch
it. Awake was what he meant.
Not awake, but he means ceremony. There is something very, very big in ceremony. And I don't know if you're even allowed to watch the funeral of Philip. I don't want to see what goes on in a church. That's awesome. But there were certain parts that were outside the church. And, you know, there's something to learn. There's something to learn what it means, dignity. There is no question about it. There is ceremony and dignity. And Chazal were enamored. And it's not just nonsense. It's not. There's something chashuv. Unfortunately, the Levites today have become very, very shach. And it's not really right. Chazal said the neshama has a need for closure, a dignified departure from this world. There's something called to be maspid, the person kehalacha, a dignified departure, and it's very, very important. And every...
What is the inyan of writing a sefer Torah?
There is no inyan. It's just a rich man's exercise. What's the inviting Sefer Torah? What? Why do they need not enough Sefer Torah in the Aron HaKodesh? The Aron HaKodesh doesn't have enough Sefer Torah? How many Sefer Torah do they need? So a person that's $50,000, COVID? Okay, is that COVID? Maybe the money can be better spent. I don't know. Make an endowment fund for a yeshiva, for some chinuch habanim, an endowment fund where the money will not, that Karen Kayemes, I have no idea. Most of these type of people who have that kind of money for Sefer Torah, they have plenty of money to do the other things as well, and it's very nice. It's a beautiful thing. What's wrong? There's nothing wrong with it, but that it should come to a point where people feel pressure, they must go and write a Sefer Torah. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. People go. They becomes you're part of a clique, of friends. And every single one of your chaver, they wrote a Sefer Torah for the parents, so you feel pressure to do the same thing, and you can't afford it. So then you have pressure to do that. That's not a healthy thing. But listen, it's a beautiful thing. But the ikka thing is, the zikaron, there is something with the neshama, especially during the time of Yitzias neshama, and when the neshama is buried, there should be dignity. And prove this. The proof is in the pudding. Because every single time you recite Birchas Hamazon, we're doing just that. After 7 years, The number of people who were killed in Beitar is astronomical. And these neshamas, Hashem had done with them a chesed, their bodies did not decay for 7 years. No one knows how that is possible. That was a nes goloi. And these bodies were given a dignified burial. And Chazal made a bracha, hatoiv v'hametiv. Hatoiv, Hashem is good, that he gave these neshamas the dignity in that their bodies had kivura, had burial. Number two, the hametiv, their bodies did not rot. There was no sirchein, which basically enhances, which elevates the degree of honor and dignity that these bodies had. That was the story of Beitar, 52 years after the Churban Bayis Sheni. 3 years prior to this horrific slaughter of Beitar, Rabbi Elozer HaModoi lived there, and he had a sense that Churban is coming. Very similar to many of the Gedolei Yisrael before the Holocaust, who knew what was coming. There are many stories like this of Gedolim who sensed, had this vision, this supernatural vision of Churban coming. Other Gedolim says, how could it be? How could it possibly be that Hashem would destroy the beauty of Klal Yisrael? I told you many times this story with my grandfather. My grandfather, when he was very, very young, it was Purim, and he went to visit, I don't remember who it was, my mother told me the story in utter detail, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, and he walked into the room and he was white. He was literally white. It must have been 1939, 1938, maybe it was already the war started. And he walked in and he saw he was white. And he said to him, what's wrong? So what's wrong? So he says, there's a war. There's a terrible... So my grandfather said to him, he was very, my grandfather was very, very, like, you know, very charismatic, very pompous. And he said, can it possibly be that Ribbono Shel Olam is going to destroy, is going to bring harm to Klal Yisrael, to Yireim, Shleimim, that whole Nusach, trying to cheer up? So this Gadol got very angry. And he started banging with his fist on his desk at my grandfather. And he said to him, you're making a big mistake. It says in the Megillah, we just read, the Haman made a gzera, lahashmid, laharoig, ula'abed, es kol ha'yehudim, minar v'yadzokein, taf v'noshim, b'yoyim echad. And it would have happened. It would have happened. The whole Klal Yisrael would have been wiped out. Oh, what about all the brachos, the haftachos, to the avos? Doesn't matter. It would have happened. The only reason why it didn't happen was because of Mordechai the Esther, Leich kinois es kol ha'yehudim, v'tzumu alai, v'al teichel v'al tishtu shloishes yamim laila v'yom gamani v'narasai otzum kein. Because Klal Yisrael did teshuvah. And if we're not going to do teshuvah, Rachman Lutzon is going to be a korban. And he was white. My grandfather was very shaken up from this. My grandfather barely survived. It was a miracle he survived himself. So here, Rabbi Elazar HaModoi was from that select group of people who had this vision, this sense of what's coming. And here it says over here, the Vahoyi Varsham, third line, he was wrapped up in a sackcloth and he would fast every day. Do not continue down this path of din. Do not do this. He repeated this. This was his tefillah every single day. A very unique tefillah. Al teshev badin hayoim. Ba'o ad riyonus nezale. So he wanted over here in the brackets, he translates this, the editor has translated the words of the Gemara for us. Kevin Shirosha in Yochal Hiskaber al Tzivoy Sholbar Koichwa. Omale, so ad riyonus, it was 3.5 years a siege. Bar Kochva was the leader of the rebellion, and Bar Kochva was winning the war. So the Kesar, he wanted to go have a meeting, some diplomacy, to sit down and see maybe we can have some type of reconciliation. Omar Lechad Kusoy, a non-Jew, a Kusi, the Kusi living in the land. This goes all the way back from the time of the Bayi, from the time of Sancheirif. Lo Seizeloch, Da'ano Chami Ma Mi'avid U'mashlim Loch Medinta. Now what do those fancy words mean? Over here in the bracket it says, Shani erema lasais limso lucho es aretz hazo. Do not seek diplomacy. I will give you a solution to win, to succeed over the Jewish people. A guy told this to one of the, it was a rebel, a Kusi who lived in the land, who knew the Jewish people inside out. He knew our customs. He knew how we operate. He will go and help Andrianus Kesar to overcome Klal Yisrael. All lay min biva dim dinta. Nichnas derech habiyuv l'soicher. He went through a tunnel into the city. All the ashach Rabbi Loza hamodoy ko'em u'matzlei. He saw, so it seems like Andrianus, let's see what happens over here. When he saw that he was davening, he came, he saw Rabbi Loza hamodoy was praying. Ava navshe lochish lei begoy udnei. He began to whisper, and he said, we'll translate the words in one moment. Rabbi Elazar HaModoi. Okay, so they made it over here. This is the story. This is a famous story. They made a whole Bilbo. They saw Rabbi Elazar as this Zakein speaking with your uncle Rabbi Elazar HaModoi. Let's just read a few lines more. We'll explain the whole story in a moment. Amalei, my Amalei, my Amalach. What did he say to you? Amalei ano amaluch malka ketali. Im amalucha malki yaharegosi vi ilo ano amaluch at ketali yose. Vi im lo yoy maluch at ataregosi. So he said, why should I tell you? If I'll tell you, you'll kill me. If I won't tell you, you'll kill me. Tovli malko ketal yosi v'lo at. Omar lei, he said to him, Omar li da de onino mashle medinto, shereitze limsos a medina li dei haroi moim. So let me just read through all the words and then we'll come back and explain. Asa gagami v'loz amadoi, Omar lei ma omar loch adin kusoi. Omar lei klom, my amr lei, Omar lei loi klom, yov lei chai ba'ud v'kali killed him, miyad yotze baschovi amra. Hoy, here's the pasuk. Hoy, roi, holil, oiz, v'yatsoin, chedev, al zroi, v'al ein, yimino, yizroi, yavosh, tivosh, v'ein, yimino, yikotich, yacharakta, esher, b'loz, ha'amadoi, zroi'on, shol, kol, yishol, v'ein, yimino, m'lificho, zroi, shol, oiz, ha'ish, yavosh, tivosh, u'droyo, v'ein, yimino, yikotich, miyad, nilka, beta, v'ner, ben, kol, zovo, period. Okay, so the story is something like this. Maybe you'll help me with the details. Basically, there was a fellow who whispered, made believe he was speaking to Rabbi Elazar HaModoi, who represented Bar, who was a relative of Ben Bar Kochva. And the truth was, it was all make-believe. It was a facade. It was just, Rabbi Elazar HaModoi was davening. He was so immersed in his tefillah, he did not even realize there was a person that was standing next to him and whispering to him. This kusoi, he knew the holiness of Rabbi Elazar HaModoi, that he was so deeply immersed in tefillah that if someone would come up to him and start whispering in his ears, Rabbi Elazar HaModoi would not even realize that somebody is speaking to him.
He didn't have to be whispering. He was moving his lips, made believe.
So normally, if someone walks into the room, someone starts talking to you, you react, you go away. But Rabbi Elazar HaModoi was so deeply immersed in davening that he did not realize there was a person standing next to him that was whispering. The person that was whispering was related to Bar Kochva.
So it's more than that. He felt that the way to undermine Beitar is to undermine Rabbi Elazar HaModoi.
Correct. To undermine. So Rabbi Elazar HaModoi was a parv, was the Gadol Hadar. He was the leader of the people. He stayed out of politics. He was out of politics. They created, okay, I don't know all the details of the story, I forgot, but basically they created
a situation,
a Photoshop opportunity. They created an image that this goes on the whole day in America. They took a picture where they were able to take the picture out of context and try to give the impression that Rabbi Elazar HaModoi is involved in politics. I told you, every day this goes on. They created a situation where they gave the Romans the impression that Rabbi Elazar HaModoi...
No, they gave the Jews the impression.
Right. They gave the Jews the
impression. Okay, give everyone the impression that he's involved in politics.
They cropped the picture.
And when
collusion of some sort.
And when that spread, that he was involved because there was a person that was seen whispering to him, and he was also whispering because he was davening, the impression was that Rabbi Elazar HaModoi is in on the rebellion. So then, you're part of this rebellion, Bar Kochva. So you're a target also. So then they went over and they said to Rabbi Elazar HaModoi, what did he tell you? Until now, you were locked up in your base medrash, you were learning, you're not involved in politics. So it's not your fight, it's not your battle. It's not your battle. But now when Rabbi Elazar HaModoi was seen speaking to the political leaders, to the military, that means you're part of the conversation, you're part of what's going on. What did he say to you? Tell us the conversation. And he said, I don't know what you're talking about. I have no, and he really didn't, because he was totally immersed in davening. And You're a liar. The picture, look at the picture. And they killed him. When they killed him, he was the zuchus. He was only because of his merit, his tefilos, that Klal Yisrael survived. Every single day, Rabbi Elazar HaMordoi was mispalel, Hashem, today do not sit in din. Do not judge the Jewish people. And Hashem listened. And this went on for 3.5 years. The Kusoi, this Goy, he understood the reason why the Romans, Adrianus Caesar, is unable to sack, to conquer Jerusalem, it's because they have a spiritual, the Beitar, is because there was a tzaddik in Beitar, in the merit of whose tefilos Beitar survives. And the only way you're going to be able to conquer Beitar is by taking out this tzaddik. Now you just can't go take out the tzaddik. It's not going to be. It's not so simple. So the plan was to create a false impression that Rabbi Elazar HaMordoi is part of the conspiracy. He's in on the plans. He's supporting the rebellion. And the way they did that was they took a relative, someone that was very well connected, and they positioned him next to Rabbi Elazar HaMordoi when he was in the middle of davening, and the people came to witness this event, and it gave the impression that he is involved. And this is what all of a sudden his name was mentioned. You're part of the conspiracy, you're part of the rebellion. And they killed him, and they felt they... The Jews, I don't know, yes, the Jews killed him because there were different factions.
They thought he was against the rebellion.
Right. He was against it, he was against the rebellion.
Okay, he was definitely against it.
Okay, that, he thought he was against it.
He was planning
to stop the rebellion. Right. So the Jews killed him. And then once he was eliminated, they no longer had a person davening for them to save Klal Yisrael. And then immediately once the Sechus disappeared, the Mer disappeared, then the Romans were able to conquer the city. I'll tell you, someone told me a story, and I want to give you the story fits into this thing, but it's interesting. If you don't know the person, then you'll make a very big mistake. Here's the story. I know the person very well, and you'll see what I mean in one moment. This is supposedly a true story. A person who I don't know if he was the first Mahan, but the second, but probably someone very close to this. And I believe the story totally. And I totally believe that this story is going to be misunderstood by two groups of people. And they're both dead wrong, in my opinion, because I know the person, and it's not like side A and side B. What's the story? It's a very holy person. He really is a very holy person. He was on a plane many, many years ago. He was going to a wedding somewhere, and he had a student with him to escort him to this wedding out of town. They're on the plane. It comes time to daven. This is a Geisha plane. This is an El Al. This is somewhere in America. They're flying whatever they're flying, whatever airline they're flying. It's a full plane. He gets up. It's time to daven. Daven, mincha. So he looks for a quiet spot on the plane. And he goes to the back. And there's no minion here. People are milling around. You know, it's a long flight. People are milling around, and he's not in anyone's way at all. And he goes into a little corner in the back, and he davens Ashrei, and then he davens Bichidus, davens Shmon Eshrei. Now, I know, daven in your seat. Maisa Shahoya Kachoya. Okay, this is the story. He davens Shmon Eshrei in the corner. Very quietly, he looks around. I have no doubt in my mind, he certainly did not think from the situation that he was... In bothering anyone whatsoever. Like other people are taking coffee, he's sitting there in the corner davening the Shemona Esrei. Happens to be, for some reason, he didn't realize that he was really blocking, something. What he was blocking, I do not know. And this is a very holy person, there's no question about it. A very holy person, and he's very makbid on davening, and he's the real deal. And he davened the Shemona Esrei, a very long Shemona Esrei. Probably it was a 15-minute, maybe even 20-minute Shemona Esrei. And then at some point, someone needed to go where he was, and he was in the way. So they tap him on the back, and they say, "Excuse me, sir, can you please move over?" He doesn't respond. Try again. Doesn't respond. Okay, so wait a few minutes. The person calls the stewardess. She politely says, excuse me, sir, can you please move over? No response. Things escalate. They call a male member of the crew, talks more directly. Excuse me, sir. Excuse me. Can you please move over? Ein kol ve'ein oine. They call the pilot. Okay, this is a commercial jet. The pilot over the PR system says, will the person standing in the back please, this is the pilot, can you please move now? Ein kol ve'ein oine. The pilot gets out of the cockpit himself and comes up to him and says, get out of the way. No response. Would you believe the story? I believe the story. I believe 100% because I know the person. I know this person. I know him. I know the person. No response. And I don't know why. They gave up. They gave up. In the meantime, they gave up. Pilot went back. I don't know. Finally, the person finishes the Shemona Esrei, says, Tachlon Aleinu, he sits down in the seat, and his companion, the student that accompanied him on this plane, says to him, a Rebbe, you got to tell me what's going on here. Rebbe, I mean, what in the world did you just Chil Hashem? Did you just make over here? Are you out of your mind? What in the world is going on over here? What's going on over here? So the Rebbe says to him, "What are you talking about? What in the world are you talking about? What do you mean? What am I talking about? You don't know what just happened here for the last 20 minutes? What are you looking at me? You don't know what happened over here? You're standing there in the corner. You're blocking it. You're blocking everyone." And they went over to one at a time, and the pilot came, and they made an announcement to the PR, and you're just standing there and diving Shemona Esrei? You don't know what's going on? I don't know what you're talking. I don't. I was diving, I have no clue what you're talking about. I have no clue. Now, let me tell you the article commentary of this story, and let me tell you the online blog commentary of this story, and let me tell you my interpretation, which I believe to be is the correct version. Art Scroll's version of the story will be, wow. Listen, you know, it was an honest mistake. He didn't know where he was standing. Look at the godless of how he can enter into a Shemona Esrei, into a mindset where he's totally oblivious to the whole world. It's like the story in the Gemara with the Tanoim, a snake is wrapped around your body. You have no idea. Wow. Makana the Shemona Esrei, a makana that Shemona Esrei, to dive into Hashem with such concentration. That's the art school version, right? Right? Isn't that Nu Chil Hashem? Listen, you know, it's not his fault. He moved to the side, you know. Don't confuse me with the facts. Look at that concentration. What will they write on the blocks? What a manuvel. What a rasha. An insensitive ingrate. This is a product of the yeshiva world and v'chulu. Total b'chutzif. You know, every dirty word in the book. How could you do such a thing? Where do you come from? Who raised you? I mean, you can go to the nastiest things you ever heard you can say about this story. I know the person. You know what the true story is? It's none of the above. It's not because his Shemona Esrei was so deep. And it's not because he is an ingrate. It's just, you have to know the person. He's a little spaced out. And it's a personality disorder that he has. He's spaced out. It's not a matter that he was trained like this. It's not a matter that he was holding. I have no doubt about that. He was diving the Shemona Esrei. He was probably thinking about a million things. He was diving the Shemona Esrei like everyone else. And while he's diving the Shemona Esrei, what do you do when you dive the Shemona Esrei? You think about life. You think about what's for lunch today, what's for dinner. Like everyone else, his Shemona Esrei was no different than anyone else's Shemona Esrei. So the article version is wrong. He was thinking about other things. Why didn't he hear them screaming at him? because of the blogs, all the nasty comments, they're also wrong. Because this person suffers from a severe personality disorder where he just doesn't get it sometimes. He's just like in his own world. It's not about religion. It's not about the way he was raised. It's a disorder. He happens to be a very, very great Talmud Chacham. And he happens to be a very well-respected person in the community. But just because you're a big Talmud Chacham and you're well-respected doesn't mean that you don't need to take medication for different types of mental illnesses. Doesn't mean, no, there are many great people who know Kol Torah Kula and they take medication every single day to keep them floating above water. So it's an amazing story. I believe the story is 100% true. And I believe that when this one day when this story will get out to the world, I believe it will be on the camp of the Haredi camp will make out of the story, wow, because he's so well respected. And I believe that the blog world will take this story and use this as fodder to fuel their agenda. I have no doubt about that. But you know, it's so funny. I know the person. I really know him. And I know that he suffers from these type of things. He's just, his mind is not always there. And he comes off many times as being very insensitive and very just lost in his own world, oblivious to his surroundings. Okay, so I just you have to always, you know, they have books say the other side of the story. Many times when there's a story, you know, someone makes a complaint, they say, oh, this guy, they right away, listen, there's another side to the story. Don't be so quick to be so gullible to listen to every word someone tells you. There's another side. But you know what the truth is? Someone Rav once told this to me. There's a third side to the story. When someone comes to a dayan and they have quite a complaint, quite a megillah to rattle off about a crime that's been committed against them, all the dayanim know, okay, very good. It's your side of the story. What's the other side of the story? But the dayanim have real experience. They know there's a third side to the story. And the third side of the story definitely opens up more insight. Okay, so here, at least we learn over here, right? I know I didn't do justice to this case over here, but over here we have this incredible story about Beitar. And the reason why the Gemara quoted this story was because of the Pasuk. This Pasuk over here says, who was this Pasuk said upon? It was said on the Roy Ho'elil. Who is the Roy Ho'elil? It refers to this Kusoy. This Kusoy is the one who we're calling over here this shepherd, this foolish shepherd who went and manipulated. Okay, this happens every single day in this world where people have an agenda and they distort the facts. They manipulate the scene, the situation to present their agenda that is false. This goes on every single day, both on the right and the left. Much more, the left does this much, much more often, but the right does this also. Okay, the right does this also. They even had over here recently, they had a whole thing over here with a police officer who recently shot. He shot someone who appeared to be in cold blood. And the video is not so clear. And you know, this led to a lot of, very recently, last week, and I think it was NBC, CNBC, they took the video and they cut off the edge of the video. They showed this incredible. They cut off the edge of the video. The video is not clear at all. They cut off the edge of the video. And then they show the real video. And they zoom in very closely and they show that the person that was killed was holding a weapon in his hands. Was holding a gun in his hands. It could have killed the police officer any second. And the police officer shot him. Now, I'm not telling you right or wrong, but it's a different story whether right or wrong when the person that was killed was holding in his hand a loaded gun versus a person was holding nothing in his hands. And it's amazing. A major league newspaper takes the video and deliberately slices off the end of the video where the weapon is in his hand. I mean, wow.
That
That's pretty. That's an amazing chutzpah to do something like that. To deliberately cut off the part of the video where the victim is holding a gun. That changes the story. I'm not saying it was right what happened, but it's a totally different story. And here is exactly the same exact idea. You have over here an honor, he's davening to Hashem to save Klal Yisrael, and someone takes advantage and goes up to him, who is related to Bar, to the opposition. To the here, this right here, the story was the Kusay was the opposition, and to give the impression that that Rabbi Loza Hamadoi is against Bar Kochva, so the hardheads of Bar Kochva they use this now as an excuse to assassinate Rabbi Loza Hamadoi. And what are they really doing by doing this? They're shooting themselves in the foot. Because now they're finished themselves. You do yourselves in at the end. Okay, so over here tomorrow, we're going to continue. Tomorrow we're going to a new topic. Tomorrow we're going to begin the next Perek Yud days. Okay, we'll take a short break. And after we want to talk about a very good topic, Bahab. This year is a very unique Bahab. I'll explain to you why. Bahab means days, hey, days, Monday, Thursday, Monday. Today is the first day of Bahab. When the minig is to fast, even to lane by Yechal by Mincha, to fast, we'll discuss what we fast for. The Talmud of Bahab touches upon some very, many, many different areas of halacha, and this year especially, it's very unique, and I'll explain why when we come back in a few moments.